Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On today's show, we are speaking with young people about the worsening mental health crisis among children and teenagers in the U.S. Suicide is the second leading cause of death among people between the ages of 10 and 14, and the third leading cause of death among people between the ages of 15 and 24, according to the CDC. More than 60% of young people with major depression do not receive any mental health treatment, according to Mental Health America. A report from the Surgeon General's office also warns that social media is a main contributor to depression, anxiety, and other mental health issues among teenagers. So what explains all of this, and what will it take to get young people the help they need? Well, since school is out, we decided to go directly to young people, and we are so happy to be joined by three young people doing incredible work. Carmen Ayala is a recent graduate of Pomona High School in Pomona, California. As a peer counselor, Carmen provided support to fellow students as they navigated their mental health journeys. During high school, Carmen underwent a rigorous interview process and 4 months of training before she and other peer counselors at her school were allowed to see students in need. Pomona High School's peer counseling program has been featured in the national media because they do such important work. Hi, Carmen. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Charlotte Rosario, a high school junior at the Nueva School in San Mateo, California. In 2020, Charlotte founded the Community Photo Booth, a nonprofit using photography to raise funds and awareness for mental health around the globe. Charlotte and her organization released a 10-minute documentary called It's Time We Talk About It, which destigmatizes conversations around youth mental health with interviews from Bay Area teenagers. Charlotte is also a youth council member for the National Alliance for Mental Illness, where she helped relaunch Ending the Silence, a high school mental health education program. Hi, Charlotte. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we're joined by Terry Delaney, a 16-year-old soon-to-be junior at Nueva High School in San Mateo, California, and a youth mental health activist. In Charlotte's documentary about mental health, It's Time We Talk About It, Terry shares stories about their struggles with mental health as a queer teenager. Hi, Terry. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thank you so much.
Well, it's great to have all of you. I want to begin by asking you about the pandemic, because you all and your friends have been through so much over the past few years. And Terry, in that powerful documentary, you said your mental health deteriorated pretty rapidly during the pandemic. You talk about going on antidepressants in November 2020, and they made it worse. And then you went to a pretty intensive outpatient program in 2021, which included group therapy for up to 3 hours. And you actually stopped going to school so you could focus on your mental health. So can you just talk about that? Like, what actually happened during the pandemic? Why do you think your mental health deteriorated so rapidly?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's something we all experience, the loneliness of not being able to see your friends, especially in middle school, which is such an important stage in social development. I don't have any siblings, so it was just me and my parents at home, and I felt really cut off from everyone. And I just my brain couldn't handle it. So I started feeling majorly depressed, and I had a therapist, but he couldn't give me the support I needed. So those first few months were a real struggle for me. And it really only got worse until I was able to go to in-person mental health care through IOP, and then being hospitalized and going into a residential program. Being around other kids who are also struggling, and being physically around people who were providing the support I needed, was so vital in my recovery journey.
This was so hard for teachers and schools. When the lockdown happened and you found out that you were going to have to stay home, and it is so interesting to hear you say you didn't have any other siblings, and so it was just you and your parents. That's something that we just haven't spent much time talking about. Do you have other kids around you at home or not? So was your school able to provide resources for you? Did they reach out to find out how you were doing? What was that process like?
Thankfully, I've always been a very open person. So I was open with my teachers about what I was going through and especially what struggles I was having, because obviously it impacted my schoolwork majorly. Nueva was really able to support me through that when I had to take off probably 4 months in my second semester of eighth grade to go through mental health care. I was really supported through that. And I was lucky to have teachers that were very understanding. And I know my therapist was like directly in communication with my school and like the head of the middle school. And I think without that, like the stress of school would have been debilitating.
Right. In the documentary, Terry, you talk about your parents who have struggled with depression in the past. Have they talked with you about depression as you were growing up?
Honestly, not really. It's for both of them. I know my mom dealt with seasonal depression in her teenage years, but it didn't really follow her into adulthood. But I think that having that experience and having the support of her mom through that, I think that translated into the way she helped me. Mm-hmm. Just hearing from my parents, their experiences, and just being able to communicate with them about it and have that understanding has been so vital.
Right. So vital. That is Terry Delaney, a 16-year-old soon-to-be junior at Nueva High School in San Mateo and a youth mental health activist. Terry shares their story in the documentary, It's Time We Talk About It. Charlotte Rosario founded the community photo booth. Charlotte and her organization released that 10-minute documentary, and I hope you can watch it. It's at yourcallradio.org. Charlotte, you are about to be a junior at the Nueva School in San Mateo. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. With Terry.
Okay. And so what would you like to add? What was the pandemic like for you?
Yeah. Thank you for the question. I would have to say that, you know, my experience during the pandemic was, you know, like many kids, very isolating. For me, my story is a little different, and it's actually the story that led me to making the documentary. When I was 12 years old, so this was right before the pandemic, my family was faced with a mental health tragedy of our own. In that year, right before the pandemic began, I actually lost my dad to suicide. And it was very, very hard for my family and I to come forward and receive support from our community at the time. You know, one, because everyone was in lockdown, but two, because of the stigma. And so for that whole period during the pandemic, I was, you know, grieving and I was feeling isolated. And so it made me realize, you know, now that we're coming out of the pandemic, that this was a really, really challenging time for teens, not only myself. And when I heard about, you know, Katie Meyer's death, Stanford women's soccer team captain, in March of 2022, I was really, you know, presented with two paths. I could continue to grieve and you know, pity my situation, or use my grief and to actually do something to help others. And so that's where the documentary came in, and I made that last year over the summer.
We're so sorry to hear about your dad. Given that that happened along with the pandemic, Where did you turn for help?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm, you know, very fortunate to have a really strong support system with my mom and my brother. During the pandemic, we were isolated together, and they were really the two other people in my life that understood my situation because they shared the same situation. And so we, you know, were there for each other during the pandemic. And I had to learn to become really open about, you know, what I was feeling, what I was experiencing. You know, one of my mom's biggest concerns was just making sure, you know, my brother and I were going to turn out okay with everything that happened. And so I learned in those 2 years during the pandemic, the importance of embracing, you know, these conversations around mental health, you know, not pushing it back and letting it fester in the background, but really bringing it to the surface, because that's really the only way I was able to move forward. And I know that that needs to be the same for other people.
Where did you find the strength to get through that and then go on to found this incredible nonprofit using photography to raise funds and awareness for mental health? And then you released a 10-minute documentary called It's Time We Talk About It.
Thank you for the question, Rose. I learned from my mom really the importance of healing by helping others. You know, she's been my superhero really throughout this entire pandemic, you know, because she's gone, you know, she lost her spouse to suicide, and also had to take on the position of a single mom and, you know, raise my brother and I, and watching her, you know, selflessly, you know, push through all of this and never once complain about our situation, never once, you know, ask for pity from anyone, inspired me to heal, you know, by helping others. And so now what I feel that my purpose in life is to really use my, you know, my grief, my pain, what has happened to me as fuel, to try to actually do something for my community and save lives when it comes to mental health.
Oh. Charlotte, what are your thoughts about how we talk about suicide in this country and how we should talk about it? Because the CDC came out with recent data showing that the United States hit just a horrific record last year, the most suicides on record. 49,500 people took their lives last year, and more than half of all suicides involved a gun, the highest percentage since 2001. So these numbers, tragically, are just rising. What are your thoughts about what you hear about suicide in the media, and then how do you think we should be talking about this?
I think conversations around mental health can be very tricky. I think it's challenging for a lot of people to, you know, bring this up at the dinner table because of, as I mentioned, the stigma around mental health. A lot of times youth are not included in these conversations because people assume we don't have maturity to talk about such complicated issues. And I think that really creates that perpetuating cycle of, you know, us not talking about mental health, and then, you know, youth and people not getting the support they need. I think it's really important that we embrace these conversations, because it's not like, you know, kids are not aware of these problems. I think, as I mentioned, a lot of people underestimate what we know. But because of media, social media, a lot of kids are made aware of these issues. And when they don't have conversations with, you know, adults, with parents that can help, you know, guide these conversations in a safe way, it can become harmful not to talk about it in an open way. So I think it's important that we embrace these conversations and that we ensure kids and teens are at the table in these conversations.
Charlotte Rosario is about to be a junior at the Nueva High School in San Mateo, California. In 2020, she founded the community photo booth to raise funds and awareness about mental health. Charlotte and her organization released a 10-minute documentary called It's Time We Talk About It, and you can find a link at yourcallradio.org. We're also joined today by Carmen Ayala, a recent graduate of Pomona High School in Pomona, California. Carmen was a peer counselor in high school and helped fellow students as they navigated mental health issues. Carmen, what would you like to add? How did COVID affect you? And then given that you're a peer counselor, what did you hear from your friends and other people, young people at Pomona High School?
Me and my family were able to transition fairly easily compared to the peers around me. Thankfully, that was because my family, we have such a big, you know, family living in our under our roof. So I still felt that sense of community, whereas a lot of my peers, I kind of saw the transition from, you know, them being outgoing, them excited for high school, them being eager to navigate, and then, you know, having school completely shut down and have this whole, you know, their lives changed. And then they still had to go about school in a way where normal wasn't an option. So I saw my peers very, like, shut down very, very fast. It was something that I never saw before. It was like a phenomenon where, you know, they went from being eager to start school to being completely almost mute. And so just seeing that difference in how fast, especially teenagers, can go under, you know, going certain circumstances. It was very, like, it was like a phenomenon.
What resources were available to these young people? It was so interesting to learn more about the peer counseling program at Pomona High School, which has been around for about 26 years and has trained over 1,200 peer counselors, including yourself. And your program has received national media attention because you're all doing such amazing work. So given that you have that program on campus, what resources were available for young people during the pandemic?
Yes. So we, peer counseling is the basically the main resource for mental health for students, or not just only mental health, but for like any questions, any navigation, any sort of, you know, thing that students need. Peer resources are kind of our main resource that we allow our students to use. And so peer resources just is the social emotional well-being of students. So we focus on that, whether it's kind of answering questions about school, providing emotional help, providing emotional stimulation, helping navigate our students into what they want to do, where they want to be, and things like that. So peer resources was one of the main resources that we had. We would host Zoom events in the pandemic, it was online. Host Zoom events, we would send out like mass emails and constantly send any type of virtual communication we would send. And majority of our students was using peer counseling, especially during the pandemic.
You're featured in a video for Spectrum News about the program at Pomona High School. And you talked about how at home you were not able to express your emotions to your family. And you say that it was so powerful when you saw other students who had a good relationship with their parents. So what changed for you? How did you become so involved in all of this?
Yeah, so my family's background is very much, which I don't blame, because mental health wasn't really necessarily a problem for the older generation of my family. So I guess it was kind of like they were blindsided because they were not exposed to mental health illnesses or had mental health issues within themselves. So it's in human nature. I've seen that humans, when they don't understand something, it's very hard for them to grasp when it's brought up. it's very hard to kind of go from not knowing something to fully being able to understand. So for me, I wasn't able to have, you know, my family relationship be as open as others would or to my liking. But once I started doing peer counseling my junior year in person, many of my clients would come to me and express their, you know, type of kind of resentment towards family, especially since, you know, when you're a child and you're going through something, the least that you want is your family to be there or to at least understand you. And when that doesn't happen, you know, it feels like, what's the point of trying to get anyone else to understand if your own family, your own blood can understand you? And it kind of breaks that hope. So seeing my client struggle through that gave me the courage to test it out. And I was willing to go through the trial and error from them. So getting up and talking to my family members, whether it would work or not, was the encouragement that I needed, that I would be able to give, you know, not advice, because we don't like to give advice, but kind of navigation for my clients. So that was the main motivator to give me the strength to kind of go from one level with family members, and not only family members, but people in general who don't understand the mental health, you know, area. It was definitely my clients and what they needed from me in order for them to be sustainable.
Carmen, for listeners who don't have children or just are not, don't have much experience with, you know, what young people are dealing with today, they might hear a headline or read a story, but I'm just so glad that we have you all on today, because it's so rare to hear directly from young people. What would you say to people about what youth are dealing with today? I mean, we hear about social media, and obviously that's really important, and we'll talk about that later in the show. But what else do you want us to know about what young people are facing today?
Yes. So young people especially face a multitude of different, you know, varieties of feelings. They go through different varieties of situations. So it's not only social media. Social media is a big part, since social media is everywhere, but it's in what I've learned in my training, it's as simple things as not understanding your emotions, not understanding how you feel, because in our training, we learn the variety and severity of emotions. You can feel a base emotion of sadness, but there's different degrees to it. Like, you can be sad because your pencil broke, or you could be sad because you lost a friend, you know, but it's still in the same stratosphere of sadness, but it's in a different level. So the little things like not understanding emotions, not being able to communicate your feelings, things as simple as a change of environment, like things as simple as changing a class, you know, in our teenage years, especially, you're going through fundamental development. And so when you are not, you know, you in your right mind don't feel comfortable at your, you know, you don't feel comfortability, you are not going to feel in any sort of, you know, emotional security. And that's what I've learned in my training, is that it's little things like that, that in school builds up, because in school, especially, you know, it's unfortunate that we can't focus on one person so specifically. So when students are, you know, just thrown into the sea of school, it's little things that add up over time that you don't think about. Things as simple as them not knowing how to communicate a question, things as simple as they don't know the degree of their emotion, things as simple as not feeling comfortable in whatever it is that they're going through.
We're going to take a quick break, but I understand that all of this incredible training that you've done and all the work with your clients, and again, just to remind listeners, Carmen just graduated from high school. You are going to now pursue a career in psychiatry?
Yes.
Oh, that's fantastic. We need you, Carmen. Really, really amazing. You're doing such great work. Carmen Ayala is a recent graduate of Pomona High School in Pomona, California. And as a peer counselor, she provided support to fellow students as they navigated their mental health journey. She had to go through a very rigorous process and 4 months of training before she and other peer counselors were allowed to see students in need. And we also have a video of the great work that Carmen has done at yourcallradio.org. Charlotte Rosario is about to be a junior at the Nueva High School in San Mateo. She's the founder of the Community Photo Booth. They raise money and awareness for mental health around the globe. Charlotte and her organization released a 10-minute documentary called It's Time We Talk About It. It features interviews with Bay Area teens, including our other guest, Terry Delaney, who's also about to be a junior at Nueva High School. Terry is also a youth mental health activist. In the documentary, Terry shares their stories about their struggle with mental health as a queer teenager. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are speaking with young activists about the worsening mental health crisis. What explains this, and what can we do to ensure young people receive the help that they need? If you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. If you are a young person and would like to talk about mental health, what is available at your school and your community? If you're a parent, how are you talking to your kids about these issues? And if you need any tips, we've got three amazing guests on who I'm sure can offer some tips about how to talk to your children about these issues. If you're an educator, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Carmen Ayala, Charlotte Rosario, and Terry Delaney, all doing really amazing work on mental health. Well, now that you've all shared your story, I would love for you all to just jump in. So let's just have a conversation about how we got here and then what it will take to get young people the help they need. And Terry, I'd like to ask you the same question I asked Carmen. For people who might not be familiar with what young people are dealing with today, what else would you like to add about what young people are facing? I have to say, I was really struck, Terry, when you shared your story about going to a residential program for 5 weeks. You lived in a house in Fresno with other kids, and you said everyone in the program was either queer or trans.
Yeah, I think that's something that surprises a lot of people and certainly surprised me when I started entering the more intense stages of mental health care is throughout hospitalization and residential, I met many kids, and of them, only one person was not queer. Mm. And I think it really says something about what a lot of queer teens are facing, even in the Bay Area, where, you know, we tend to be much more accepting. I think there are so many facets of being queer. Often, you know, parents aren't accepting. And when you have parents and family that reject who you are, you don't have a line of communication. You can't come to them when you're having mental health issues because you don't have any precedent. You have no reason to believe they'll support you because they completely reject who you are. Mm. And even like, I'm so grateful to my parents. I have their full support in being trans and queer. But there is being a minority is just hard. Even like the stress of dealing with extended family or being trans, you know, you're not connected to your own body. And that, like, being unable to get the physical, like, transition care you need, like going through or being too young to even, you hate your body. And that is going to put such a strain on your mental health even by itself. And then going online and seeing a lot of hate for who you are, even after sharing my story on other local news on KPIX, I got comments on those interviews that were transphobic. And it's really, it people underestimate how much of a strain that can put on you.
Right. This is so important. In addition to parents who are not accepting their queer or trans kids, as you say, Terry, you have to deal with so much ugly, just ugly language on social media, but you also have to deal with this from the Republican Party because the rhetoric they use is just beyond shameful. I won't repeat what they say, but we all know what they say about LGBTQ people, and they have introduced almost 500 anti-LGBTQ bills this year alone, which include bans on gender-affirming care. And I feel like the media just doesn't do enough focus enough on the fact that these words have consequences. And as we enter this presidential election, you know, I'm afraid that the language is just going to get really ugly. So can you talk about that and how that language really does affect you and other people in the LGBTQ community?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't, you know, I don't want to pin everything on the Republican Party, because they're absolutely accepting Republicans and they're absolutely hateful Democrats. But, you know, there's a lot of political rhetoric about trans people and queer people, and seeing the anti-LGBTQ bills and laws, it's really disheartening, even living in an area where it doesn't affect us as much, you know, and seeing people in support of these, and seeing DeSantis gaining popularity, even with the Don't Say Gay bill and his further rhetoric about queer people. It's really like, it not only spreads hate among non-queer people, but it's so much for queer people to see on a daily basis. And like, it gives you this sense of paranoia, because you never know who around you supports those people and those things. And you see, you know, people like J.K. Rowling starting to say these super hateful things, and it's like that, I know, pulled the rug out from a lot of trans and queer people who took solace in her work. And that's just one example, mm-hmm. Of just like seeing these people that you trusted, or like you derive joy from their work, and you have that taken away from you. It really builds this sense of paranoia that eats into your life.
Data from the CDC shows that 76% of LGBTQ high schoolers have persistent feelings of sadness and hopelessness, and 74% reported emotional abuse by a parent, compared with 37% and 50% of heterosexual students. Given what young LGBTQ people, well, really, doesn't matter the age, have to deal with all of the really ugly political rhetoric that we're hearing and these bills that are passing, what resources are available? And then what can the broader society do to support you and others who are affected by this language?
Sure. I mean, in terms of resources, I think a big one is the Trevor Project, especially mm-hmm. for queer youth. They provide amazing support for kids dealing with unsupportive households, dealing with mental health issues. They have crisis lines, and they have like also great articles and resources for educating people. And then, you know, for what individual people can do, the biggest thing is just to make it clear to the queer people in your life that you are not one of the hateful people, you know, to establish yourself as a resource, and to educate yourself, because there is nothing more valuable to a queer person than someone who understands what they're going through, and who can, even if you've never experienced it yourself, can conceptualize what they're going through. It's really so important.
I'm glad you brought up the Trevor Project. We had someone on from the Trevor Project about a month or so ago, and they have a chat line. You can text them, you can call them. It's the trevorproject.org. We should also mention the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, which just had its year anniversary last month. Again, it's the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. And we are going to do a show about that just to find out how they're doing and if they have the resources that they need, because that was definitely a question on our last show. That is Terry Delaney. Terry is about to be a junior at Nueva High School in San Mateo. Terry is also a youth mental health activist. Terry tells their story in the documentary, It's Time We Talk About It. Charlotte, what else would you like people to know about what youth are facing today? And what can we all do to raise our voices to ensure that young people have the resources they need?
Yeah, I think there are lots of factors that are playing into, you know, this youth mental health crisis right now. I think something that hasn't been touched on that I'd like to talk about is this, the factor of social media. I know that, you know, it's been picked up on a lot of news media, you know, the effects of social media on, you know, youth mental health. And I can speak to the fact that as someone who is a user of social media, that, you know, the time that you spend online, you know, scrolling through these feeds really does impact, you know, your mental health. Kids are being exposed to misleading, inappropriate, and, you know, harmful content at even younger ages. You know, content that's showing them unrealistic, you know, bodies, or, you know, FOMO, you know, fear of missing out. And, you know, all of that time spent online really adds up. And it's why a lot of kids today are reporting that they feel isolated.
What can be done about that? Because we found some data, a couple of surveys found that teenagers spend about 3.5 hours a day on social media. And when asked about the impacts of social media on their body image, 46% of young people ages 13 to 17 said social media makes them feel worse. So what can be done about this?
I think, you know, kids need to, you know, really embrace these conversations around mental health and how, you know, things like social media are impacting their mental health. As you mentioned, you know, a lot of teens are aware that, you know, all that time they spend on TikTok is harmful and does not make them feel good. But a lot of that reflection does not come with enough action, as I like to think about it. I think a lot of teens know that they need to change, you know, something in their life, but don't know how or don't see their peers making changes as well. And so I think that can make it difficult to develop a healthier relationship with social media. I also think that there needs to just be more of an open conversation about, you know, social media and its effects between youth and parents and in youth and educators, because a lot of times adults don't really know what goes on social media and what type of content, you know, they're kids and their students are seeing, and so that discrepancy can just lead to a lack of empathy sometimes, just not really being aware that, you know, their you know, student or their kid just saw something that could have been very harmful, and that's why they're feeling the way they are. So I think there just needs to be more open dialogue as well.
On today's Your Call, we are speaking with young people about the worsening mental health crisis, what explains it, what can we do to support young people, and what resources do they need. Let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Ruth in Berkeley. Hi, Ruth. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. For Delaney, is it Terry Delaney?
Oh, Terry, yes.
I want to ask him a question. Is when you were in the residence program, were parents given counseling at the same time? I have two comments and or questions, and that's one of them.
Okay, let's ask Terry that one first.
That's a really interesting question, and to be honest, I'm not entirely sure of the answer. During that time, I was very much focused on myself. I think that the residential program was definitely in communication with my parents about my own progress, but I don't think they received support as to, you know, dealing with my crisis.
Terry, how did you find this residential program?
Well, my intensive outpatient program had me hospitalized, and then it was basically like the only option I had. They were like, you need to go into a residential program. So really we got resources from the IOP and from the hospital. And there are also, you can find plenty of resources online, but for us, it was really directed, like what we were directed to from those other professionals.
I was very curious about this because more than 60% of young people with major depression say they're not receiving any mental health treatment.
Yeah, I think often when you don't have that open line with your parents, I mean, sadly, it seems like the only way to start that journey is to get hospitalized. And then fight for what you need beyond that. But even then, I know people who, you know, attempted suicide and they just were not taken seriously, and they didn't get the support they needed because they attempted suicide poorly. Ugh. And it wasn't treated seriously enough.
Wow. Well, Ruth, thank you for the question. You have another one?
See if I can remember it. This is the person, the young woman who is a peer counselor. And I
yes,
just
that's
wanted
Carmen.
To say I could feel your empathy, and that you got to the core of it, of addressing deep, profound sorrow from a loss through to a hurt and sadness. And things that can be healed, and it was very, very moving. Thank you.
Thank you. I think you're talking about Charlotte because she lost her dad, and then went on to found an organization and do such incredible work.
That's the person.
Yeah.
That I'm thinking of. Or addressing.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ruth. Charlotte?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much, Ruth. That really means a lot. I really appreciate your comment.
You know, I also wanted to ask, given that you all do such important work and these conversations are so important, when the CDC came out with that fairly extensive report about mental health, the mental health crisis among young people, they found that 55% of respondents reported emotional abuse by a parent or another adult at home, and 11% experienced physical abuse. And I remember hearing that on the radio, and it just stopped me in my tracks. But there was no follow-up from the host. And then I was just really surprised that portion of the report has not gotten more attention. And Charlotte, I wonder, is it because this is an issue that society really struggles with, the fact that kids are being abused in their own homes, and we don't know how to talk about it?
I think that's a really big issue, and you're, you know, right on the nail that it's not being talked about enough. I think there is a lot of just systemic challenges around amplifying youth voices when, you know, these family challenges come up, because, you know, if you're a minor, if you're under 18 years old, you know, often you're speaking through your parents. You know, your parents are the voice for you in getting help. You know, they're the ones that decide whether they're going to drive you to the doctor's office or whether, you know, you're going to get care or support that you need. And so it's really challenging when that, you know, that support system, you know, that having those parents that can help you in those ways, when you don't have that as a resource, it's very, very, you know, scary for a lot of youth who are in situations where there's domestic violence in the household. And when they're, you know, in fact, in situations where they're the recipients of that violence. So I think there needs to be ways that youth can receive support when challenges like these come to the surface, because, you know, a lot of times there's just going to be so many barriers, whether that's systemic or stigma, that prevent youth from getting the help that they need.
Carmen, what would you add, given that you were a peer counselor at Pomona High School? Did you help young people who reported abuse at home? And for young people who do not have the support of their parents, how can we reach them?
Yes. So during my time as a peer counselor, I faced a multitude of different situations that came from students. And there were a few instances where, you know, the family life wasn't the greatest, and there was, you know, deals of abuse, whether it was mostly emotional and things like that. And going into those kind of situations, especially as a peer counselor, we make it a very key expression that we are mandated reporters. And whenever we feel like they're unsafe, we communicate that with the higher ups and my advisor. And then we handle that from there. But, you know, when all that legal stuff is getting handled, they still need support and they still need guidance and they still need that key sort of kind of support from people. And so when they communicate to me, especially things that are going on, you know, it's very important for them to have someone with them through all times. You know, even if you feel like you can't legally help them or, you know, get rid of the situation as a whole, since that is very unrealistic. And especially, you know, with these things, it takes time, which is incredibly suffering, especially to, you know, me as a peer counselor who has to witness. But during that time, you need to remember that they still need support, whether or not the situation is going to get handled sooner or later. So they still need people to talk to. They still need guidance. They still need that emotional security. They still need that belief that there is someone on their side, whether things are going to change or it's going to take a while. So remembering that children, especially going through domestic violence, whether it's physical, emotional, verbally, whatever, they need that support now. So if you feel like you can't help them entirely, that support will work wonders, whether it's talking to them daily, whether it's providing them affirmations, whether it's providing them, you know, the intelligence of what they're going through in cases of emotions, since children especially don't know how to communicate emotions effectively, since there's not really any education behind it. So those little things that implement, you know, your support will help entirely. So I think us as a nation just have to realize that children especially are navigating the world, you know, at the first time. You know, they're going through things that they don't know. And when they don't have that guidance from their family, you know, it takes, you know, you to be the one to be there to support them. Whether or not it's not the belief of believing that if you can solve it right then and there, that doesn't matter. What matters is that the support you're giving them now, whether that's little or not to your mind, it may seem like it's not drastic, but any amount of support that you give youth will make a difference, because that just shows that you are there in terms of them, like you're there for them. So any support that you can give, whether it's emotional affirmations, whether it's as simple as checking up on them, will work wonders. And that's what we as a nation need to learn.
And is it safe to say, Carmen, that just even reaching out to a young person, just showing them that you care. I mean, that simple act of kindness actually makes a big difference.
Yes. You know, children especially are afraid to fail. They're afraid to have hope because they don't know what will happen after. You know, children don't have that life experience of, you know, trial and error. So when they're faced with situations that if they try something new, they're scared because they don't know what will happen, especially when it comes to things like internally, where they're going to be the recipient of what they're feeling. They are not going to put themselves in a position where they don't know what's going to happen. So when you provide that stability of, I'm going to reach out to you, because I noticed is a key difference in what gets children going, what gets children encouraged to talk. So as simple as checking up on someone, it shows that you know who they are, you've recognized how they are, and you've recognized a change, and that you're willing to talk to them. You know, you may think that, oh, I'm just going to check up on them, but it showcases the reality of you took a notice, you took a stand, and you took the chance on helping that person. And when somebody takes a chance on you, you're willing to take a chance on yourself.
Wow. Well, you're going to be a great psychiatrist, Carmen. We really appreciate the incredible work that you're doing. Carmen Ayala is a recent graduate of Pomona High School in Pomona, California. And as a peer counselor, she provided support to fellow students as they navigated their mental health journeys. Charlotte Rosario is about to be a junior at the Nueva High School in San Mateo. She founded the community photo booth to raise money and awareness around mental health. Charlotte and her organization released a 10-minute documentary called It's Time We Talk About It, with interviews from Bay Area teens, including Terry Delaney, who is also about to be a junior at Nueva High School. Terry is a youth mental health activist, and in the documentary, Terry shares stories about their struggles with mental health as a queer teenager. Terry, Charlotte, and Carmen, again, thank you so much for the great work that you do, and thank you for joining us. We'd love to have you back. And you can find more information about their great work at yourcallradio.org, and be sure to watch that 10-minute documentary called It's Time We Talk About It. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.